Hello, and welcome to another episode of Is This Thing On? My name is Dan Charette. This is the podcast for January 31st, 2006. So, on my last podcast, I talked a bit about podiobooks and how I'm planning to make a podiobook out of my novel. Podiobooks are audiobooks, but they are podcasted audiobooks, where every chapter, for example, is another episode in a podcast. And you would subscribe to it just like a podcast. But where podiobooks is different is it gives you the ability to subscribe at chapter 1 instead of having to catch up at like chapter 12 of a 24-part novel. You can start at the beginning and you can set the pace. You can get your subscription once every week, every day, whatever. Kind of talked about that last time. Well, I also mentioned that I'd love to interview its founder, Ivo Terra, on the podcast. Well, he left me a nice note on the blog with some tips for future podcasts and for the patio books, and then let me know that he'd be happy to join me on the podcast. So I'm happy to announce that this podcast features that interview with him. Ivo was also in a band here in Phoenix a few years back called Serpent of Eve. It turns out that they had just made some of their tunes available on the PodSafe Music Network. And I listened to almost all of them, and I've got to admit there's very many different styles of music. I'm very impressed. My eclectic music tastes completely jonesed over the whole album that I heard. I had a hard time picking two for the show, but I chose what I think are two pretty cool ones. So I'm going to start out here with a funky little number called Ride by Serpent of Eve. Check it out, and I'll be right back with my interview with Ivo Terra.
Yeah. So the long drive to work is getting you down? Do you feel like the other drivers want to run you off the road and beat you with the tire iron of life? Relax. Take a break. And let Michael and Evo ease your drive time woes. Slice of sci-fi. It's not as good as having a stormtrooper on your hood, but it's close.
Thank you very much for finding the time in your busy schedule to talk with me tonight.
Yeah. You know, my wife and I were just talking about time earlier. She said she wanted to go join, she wanted to find time to join an athletic club. I had to explain to her, honey, you don't make time. You know, there's an exact amount of time between the time you get up and the time you go to bed. There's no more.
Right.
You know, unless you can orbit the Earth really quickly and somehow, you know, slow it down for you.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You can't do it. You just have to move other stuff out of the way. So I'm happy to do it for you.
Thank you very much. So I wanted to quickly run through some of your credits that at least I know of.
Sure.
To sort of get this started. You're the co-host of three different podcasts, Slice of Sci-Fi, Dragon Page Cover to Cover, and Winging It.
Mm-hmm.
You're also the co-creator of PatioBooks.com.
Right.
And if that wasn't enough, you teamed up with T. Morris, also from PatioBooks, to create a wonderful book called Podcasting for Dummies, which was just released in November of 2005, right?
That's correct.
How many other projects are you working on, and are they all podcasting related, or do you actually have time for other things?
Oh, well, believe it or not, you have to make time for other things as well. Oh, I said it now, make time. there's actually one podcast you didn't mention, and that's my cult cast.
Oh, you know, and I just found that one too, so forgive me for that. That's your herbal cast,
well,
correct?
Actually, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I'm a practicing herbalist.
Mm-hmm.
I am an herbalist. I still say practicing because I have a handful of clients, but realistically, there's a lot more time I'd like to spend being an herbalist than I actually can. That's obviously not where the universe wants me to be right now. So,
mm-hmm.
No, the cult cast, while it's housed on my herbal website right now, nothing to do with herbalism. It's really all about my philosophies on life, and they're fairly heavy. You know, we tried to divorce them from the sci-fi stuff. Lots of people said, "Oh, I can't wait to see what a sci-fi geek's outlook on life is." And I gotta tell you, it's not a sci-fi geek's outlook on life. I'm really not that much of a sci-fi geek. I enjoy it, and I have a lot of fun doing the shows. But here's a chance for me to really, you know, speak some honest to goodness what I consider truth about the way the world works and how screwed up things tend to be sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, and I put a show out once every 3 to 4 weeks. It's not my main focus. When something strikes me as I must speak about this now, I sit down, crank out a 5-minute essay, and sit down and record it and push it out.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely
have
to add that one to my list then.
Well, yeah, it's different than everything else that I do, that's for sure. So, but yeah, I do tend to stay rather busy because outside of all of those things, I got a full-time job, I have a family, I have a son that plays hockey 100 miles away. So yeah, there's rarely a time when I'm not sitting in front of the computer doing something. But I'm always thinking about podcasting and what's the next thing we can do with that. That's really has struck my fancy the most of anything in a long time.
Okay, so when did you start podcasting?
Well, officially, we started podcasting on October the 14th, 2004.
Okay.
My partner, Michael R. Menengay, mm-hmm. had sent me an email about this new thing called podcasting on October the 12th. And 2 days later, I finally looked at his email and said, well, heck, we can do this. We already have our... You know, we were already doing our show as an internet radio show.
Right, the Dragon Page?
And the Dragon Page Cover to Cover, yeah. It was on internet radio as well as several terrestrial radio stations around the country. And most of them, if not all, were taking our show on MP3. And we already had it up in a secured area. I had an RSS feed because I'm using a blog to maintain the site. So I had those two things.
Right.
All I had to do was figure out how to somehow magically stick the MP3 file inside of there. I was using movable type, and there's a great plug-in called, you know, MT Enclosures.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, you know, it took me 2 days to do it, but realistically, it took about a half an hour
right.
to get it ready. And so we were podcasting out of the gate. But we were cheating, right? Because we already had all the heavy lifting done. It was just
right.
a matter of me making one connection between two points, and we were there.
That's sort of what happened with podcasting in general, though, isn't it? It was sort of, hey, we could do this, and we have that, so if we just do this here, and boom.
Oh, exactly.
The whole media just sprang up out of nowhere.
Well, there are a lot of naysayers, and you can still find them about podcasting, you know, that, and the big complaint they say is this is nothing new. You're right. It is
yeah.
nothing new. People have been putting audio files, either as we were doing with our show or as an audio blog, for a really long time. You know,
mm-hmm.
RSS is nothing new. Dave Weiner, if you can believe that Dave did it, and I actually do, Dave Weiner, you know, made the enclosure plugin work to help things out, and Adam Curry, of all odd people, wrote the first script that, you know, somehow sucked it out and moved it around for you automatically. But, yeah, it's just bringing together pieces. So you're exactly right. The forerunners of podcasting, those of us that did it from July to, say, November, we were all using other pieces and just sticking together in new and exciting ways. So, yeah, we didn't – there wasn't a lot of work to do. It was just, gee, I wonder who will listen to me this way now.
Right. I think it also owes a lot to iPods becoming a household name, but you don't need an iPod to listen to them. But it was because of portable media players, I think, also played a big part in once people were able to audio blog and get the enclosures and download it automatically, putting it onto a media, taking it and going, that was it.
You're exactly right. Untethering from the computer was really the key. Because while there's still a significant portion of people that will listen to podcasts on their computer, that's not the way it was intended. The intention here was for you to get it whenever it happens to come down, 3 o'clock in the morning when you're not using your computer, and for you to move it to your portable player of choice so that you can take it with you. You know, it's to-go type information. And there's no doubt that the success of the iPod really fueled that. Although it's funny, you mentioned you don't need to have an iPod to listen to podcasts, and you're exactly right. Inside of the book, Podcasting for Dummies, I make that statement over and over again,
yes.
and even go so far as to say, I don't even own an iPod, but I
yes.
will tell you a story. And
okay.
I didn't own an iPod for a long time. As soon as I got a copy of Podcasting for Dummies actually in print in my hand, not an advanced copy, but the real ones out of the stores,
mm-hmm.
I went down 30 minutes later and bought an iPod. So there. So I could at least, I wouldn't want to lie in the book. So if you were one of the first people to buy the book as soon as it went on the shelf, it was true then. It's not true anymore. I now own an iPod.
And what do you listen to on your iPod?
Oh my God.
If I may ask.
Well, you know, I'm one of those crazy obsessive people that once he finds something that he really enjoys,
mm-hmm.
goes to town with it. So at last check, there were 65 different podcasts that I'm listening to at any given time.
65. But you have
yeah.
the time on your commute to listen to them.
Well, that's true. You know, that's probably the best way to do it. You know, I live 105 miles away from the studio.
Right.
And so that's an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back at least once a week. My son plays hockey, as I mentioned, so I've got an hour drive to take him to hockey and an hour drive back to hockey at least 2 times a week. Then I got the 2 hours when I'm sitting there watching him practice to listen to hockey twice a week. So
right.
I actually have a lot of time to listen. So yeah, I can consume those 65. Although I got to tell you, I just came back from being gone for 10 days in Belize and being gone for like 4 days for a hockey tournament where my mom was out, so I was kind of not very nice of me to sit and listen to podcasts while she was out. So I just got caught up yesterday from about 20
wow.
days back. It was
wow.
crazy. My iPod had 120 different episodes in it. But you ask me what I'm listening to right now. Not as much science fiction as people might think.
Okay.
You know, people, I think, tend to assume that I listen to a lot of sci-fi shows. I really don't. For the sci-fi shows out there, I do listen to Escape Pod.
Mm-hmm.
I love Steve Ely is doing with it, and you know, I've had a lot of fun doing a couple of shows on his, doing a couple of readings. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've been listening to Merle Lafferty's Geek Foo Action Grip since day one.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a great person and a great friend. You know, she contributes to our show now.
Yes.
I listened to Paul S. Jenkins' The Rev Up Review out of the UK, and I listened to Daniel Emery's Brief Glimpses of Somewhere Else. And that's about it for science fiction shows. A few others here and there when I get a chance. And then, of course, various Podio books that are on there. But I try to broaden my horizon with the podcasting world. You know, I've been listening to Dan Klass's The Bitterest Pill for a long time. Love what Dan does. He's since turned me on to a variety of other people, such as Lance Anderson's The Verge of the Fringe, Kush, Things I Say. So I listen to. I really try and get an understanding of what's going on in a podcast world, or the podosphere, as we call it. But it's become so difficult for me to talk about all of them. I've just posted them. If you go to dragonpage.com and click on the About link and then click on My Picture, you can see every podcast I'm currently listening to. I just updated it a week ago. About every 3 months, someone sends me a note saying, hey, those haven't changed in a while. So I put new ones up there. But those are the ones I listen to regularly. You can find out there.
Very cool. All right. Okay, so when did you meet T. Morris, and were you helping him with his novel, and that's what made Podio Books, or how did that work out?
Yeah, T. Morris was one of the first guests we had on the Dragon Page cover to cover in early 2002. He sent us a copy of his book, Moravi, and I loved it. So we've kind of developed a friendship over the years. In November of 2004, he contacted me and said, his agent for non-fictional work had contacted him and said there was an opportunity to write a podcasting book. Would he be interested? So he immediately called me and said, hey, you're the guy that's having me podcast my book, Moravi.
Right.
Maybe you should help me with that. Yeah, I should help you with that, T, since you don't even understand the technical side of the things on the back end. You're going to need some help. So I said, sure. You know, we can probably put a 120-page book together. He talked to his agent. His agent said, it's a 360-page book. I said, you're kidding. 360 pages for me to say, record it, post it up on a web server, and link your RSS feed to it. There's no way we can do that. So, and then he said, well, it's a for dummies book. I said, crap. I can't say no now.
Yeah, you got to do that.
So, yeah, you know, how do you say no to that kind of deal? You know, that's a real book.
Yeah.
So that's how we get together, writing together. But yes, I was helping him podcast his novel, Moravi. I approached him back in October and said, there's this new thing we're doing called podcasting. I think you should be involved somehow. I'm not sure. What do you think? Well, he was going to release his second book in that series come July of 2005, and he talked to his publisher and got permission to go ahead and release every chapter of that book in serialized form in a podcast up until the release date. Right after he and I started chatting, I called up another guy, Mark Jeffrey, who I'd also spoken with about the idea, and said, you're going to do your book too that way. I didn't even give him a choice. Scott Sigler contacted me and said, hey, I'm going to do this new thing called podcast for my book. And I said, it's not new. I'm already doing it, but I'm happy to include you as well. So we stuck him in the mix. So for the longest time, it was those three. And then we found out about a guy named Paul Story doing a book called Tom Corbin. So they were the first four. And since that time, I'm not sure how many there are out there right now. I know we've got 20 different podcast books up at podiobooks.com right now. And there's probably an equal number of those out there that are doing it solo projects for now.
Right. And that's how Scott Sigler started, is he was doing it on his own.
Yeah.
And was the first, if I'm not mistaken. And
Actually, there are three different firsts.
Okay.
And I've since I am the one that created the word Podio Books, by God, I get to say who was first.
Okay, there you go, please.
Scott Sigler, I'll set the record straight because I actually have the timeline on all these books. Scott Sigler had the very first podcast-only novel.
Okay.
You couldn't get Earthcore in print form. The only way you could get this book was via podcast. And it was previously written. He had it written and ready to be published before 2001. But for a variety of reasons, it never happened. The imprint he was with fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the other first is T. Morris. Now, T. Morris had the official very first podcast novel. He had an MP3 file attached to an RSS feed via enclosure before anybody else. Not long before, but close enough to before everybody else. So the first ever podcast novel was T. And then we have Tom Corvin, which was written by Paul Story over in Scotland. His was the first novel written exclusively for a podcast.
Ah.
His book wasn't written. He was writing it as he was going along.
Cool.
Every 3 or 4 days, he would write a chapter, sit down, record it, and re-release it. So three different firsts.
Wow, okay.
And they all happened within a three-week period.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about this medium. It's just, boom, there's this amazing explosion of ideas, and people are having the same ideas. You know, we could do this. And now, was Paul Stories, was he also doing it as a book, as a blogged book, or just as a podcast?
Strictly as a podcast. You know, I kind of embarrassed to say this. I heard the term book for the first time 2 weeks ago. I mean, here I am, the guy that was doing an internet radio show all about science fiction books, and he's the guy that's behind Podio Books and had never heard of books before.
Right.
Sorry. I kind of skipped that. But yeah, those are cool too. But no, his book, Tom Corvin, was only available as a podcast.
Wow. Cool. How is Podio Books doing right now? I mean, you said you got about 20 books up there right now. Are you actively pursuing more authors, or are more authors coming to you? How's it going so far?
Well, it's going really well. We put the site up in a beta form, kind of an official beta, the 1st of October of last year. And I think we launched with, I don't know, five or six different titles. Since that time, we went out of beta last weekend before last, I forget when it was, with all new site design. Everything works well. And with 20 different titles on top of it.
Right.
So really excited. We're adding, as of last count, almost 100 new members a day.
Wow.
That's really cool.
That is very cool.
And they're subscribing to, you know, 3 to 4 books each on average. That's the cool thing about Podio Books, you know. It's hard to read, unless you're a crazy person like me, more than one book at a time.
Right.
But it's easy to listen to more than one Podio Book at a time. You know, the way we designed that system is each feed is unique to each individual. So even if you're on chapter 17 and you're the author, and somebody comes in next week, they don't have to catch up 1 through 16.
Exactly.
They get chapter 1. And it comes down to them every week, if that's the way they set it, chapter 1. So on a Monday, they could go subscribe to Moravi. And on a Tuesday, they could come back to PodioBooks.com and subscribe to Earthcore. And on Wednesday, they could come back and subscribe to Amber Page. That's 3 books, 3 days, stretched
right.
out. And you can easily listen to them 1 chapter at a time that way. So you asked the question, are we going out and getting more authors? Yes. Last count, 60 different people are in various stages of developing their book right now. Some of them are in the real early stages. Some of them are in the process of recording chapters. So there are 60 different authors, last I checked, that are in the process of recording a Podio Book with us. Some of them, most of them, have actually came to us and said, I want to put out a book. You guys seem to be the place. A few of them we've went out and cultivated, you know, and then said, you're already doing this. You should come over here since
right.
I'm not charging you anything, and I've already got the audience base. So
right. And there you go. And there's bound to be a lot of them that are like me, like, this is really cool. I would like to do this too. What advice do you have for authors like me who are kind of, we've got a book. What do we do now if we wanted to make a Podio Book out of it?
Well, you're ahead of the curve. A lot of the people that talk to us want a book and a Podio Book. So my first advice to you is you need a book first.
Okay.
It worked for Paul Story, actually writing his book as he goes. But I've been involved in the publishing industry long enough to realize that first drafts, 99 times out of 100, suck.
Mm-hmm.
You're not ready to podcast your first draft.
Right.
Write your book. Edit your book. Editors, by the way,
yeah.
don't have the same last name as you. It needs to be somebody different than your mother.
Yes.
Anyhow, once your book is solid, assuming you're starting with a book that is as tight as you can make it, right? Then what are your next things to do? First thing you want to do is go listen to some other folks that are doing it, because there's a lot of right ways, a lot of different right ways to do a Podio Book, and find your particular style. You know, some people use music all the way throughout. Some people have a very heavy, engaging, you know, first couple of minutes before they get into their book, and they do it almost Battlestar Galactica style with previously on, and then next week, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
Like
which
Scott
is, yeah, like I was just going to say, Earthcore does that.
Yeah, well, Scott did that. I mean, he said, you know, this is what 24 does. This is what Battlestar does. This is what people are used to, by God. I'm going to do it that way. You know, Scott's a media whore, so he's going to just do what it takes to get there. But everybody's different. You know, some people, like Jack Mangan, who's doing Spherical Tomy. You know, Jack's deadpan. I mean, the boy seems to have no emotion as it comes out of his mouth. And that's an okay delivery style. The nice thing about audiobooks are it is different than an audiobook. When I listen to an audiobook, I want professional-sounding voice actors giving it to me. And that's because what we've been trained to expect.
Well, but and you're also paying $40 for, you know, an audiobook.
No doubt. But with a audiobook, I want to hear it from the author, in the author's voice. I don't want somebody else to do it for him or her. I would actually prefer to listen to it in that voice because I get a much better connection to that story by listening to the guy who wrote it as opposed to some actor that was paid $500 a minute to try and read it. So, back to the advice I give somebody. Invest in a good quality microphone. That's okay. Probably the single best piece of advice I can give you. Your editing software is immaterial. You're right. Not going to do that much with it. Audacity and GarageBand, two free products, well, sort of free for GarageBand if you got a Mac, are perfectly fine. Use Audacity. It's going to do everything you want it to do. Spend some time navigating through one of the PodSafe music directories to find the music that fits your book. Contact that artist and say, I want to use this. Are you okay with it? You already have the rights to do it, but it's still nice to do that.
Well, absolutely.
That's all you got to do. Get a good microphone. Get some good background music with it and put your heart and your soul into it. Take your time. Don't rush. Audiobooks aren't going anywhere. We'll be around until you get it right.
Cool. And that brings me your first point, a good quality microphone. I'm still using a good old-fashioned, you know, Radio Shack headset microphone plugged into my computer. But I've heard a lot of people saying that the USB microphones are better just for going with that way. Would you suggest that? Or would you say, look, you really need like a studio quality, decent microphone?
Well, it really depends on what else you want to do with that. There are plenty of people that are recording their audiobooks on, like me, I've got a $60 Plantronics USB headset that I'm talking to you on. And so you can do it with that. I would not, personally. The lowest microphone I would use, personally, if I was going to record these books, I got a Shure FM50 or SM58 sitting right next to me. And that's what I do all of my recording on solo. Now, when I go to the studio with Mike, he's got $700 AKG, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know what they are,
right,
that we do it with. But if you're going to do it right, get a good quality studio condenser mic preferably, I would say, although I'm really not the person to talk tech on microphones with. I don't know that I go with a USB mic.
Okay.
I might go with a USB interface that can plug in a regular microphone into that with a nice XLR jack or a quarter-inch plug. The USB mics, I've heard people say that there are some real high-quality ones, and I'm going to go to the store and research some of those over the weekend because I'd like to be able to just plug in straight to my computer and not plug in the Shure SM58 into the Motu Traveler, which then goes into, you know, all that extra stuff that goes into it. But the thing about a microphone that everybody should know is go try them out. They sound, just because I use microphone A doesn't mean your voice is right for that same microphone.
Right.
You might be able to get off with a much cheaper microphone, so go spend some time testing them all out. Go to Guitar Centers. They've got 1,000 different microphones there. Tell the guy behind the counter you're not buying today. You just want to check them out. Put some headphones on, see how your voice sounds. And the one that makes you sound the best, buy it.
Cool. Great advice. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So, let's see. Besides working on Podcasts for Dummies, what else have you written?
Well, my first official written opportunity also came from Mr. T. Morris. trying to think exactly when this was. It was either 03 or 04. He was putting together an anthology, if you will. I guess not an anthology, not the right way to say it. It was called The Fantasy Writer's Companion. A year or so before, he had contributed to a book called The Complete Guide to Writing Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the sequel to that, which kind of struck me as odd. If it was complete, why would we need a sequel? So we kind of joked about the name for the longest time. We were going to call it, you know, Bride of the Complete Guide to Writing Fantasy, Return of, things like that. But in the end, they decided to call it The Fantasy Writer's Companion. And T had sent me an email, and he said he would like for me to contribute a chapter to the book, which was kind of funny because for those of people out there who listen to any of my shows that I do, I don't like fantasy. I'm a reader of hard science fiction and bizarre stuff. Fantasy never has really, you know, lifted my flag, to say. It's not my thing. So as he asked me to write this, I wasn't sure what to do. And we were going through my background, and he said, well, maybe you could do something with herbalism, which also struck me as kind of odd. But then as I realized it, you know, most fantasy books are written in 500-year-old, some sort of medieval setting, at least where there's not modern-day technology.
Right.
And herbal medicine is plant-based medicine. You go pick something, you do something with it, and you get medicine out of it. But so many books and movies, like Lord of the Rings, for example, get it wrong.
Right.
You know, that's not the way things actually happen. Or they have it to where that, oh, this person has broken his leg. Quick, we have to go rush and find the healer 17 villages away. Well, you know, 500 years ago, people could take care of just about anything on their own. And so I decided to write that. So I wrote a book on how to make herbal medicine work in your fantasy world. And it was a lot of fun. And I got to help you make up names for your plants. And, you know, and I used real world stuff, you know, how plants got their names, you know, through folklore and through legend and through what they did. And a lot of the plants out there have healing names with them. So that was the first thing I ever sat down to write, I guess professionally, you know, things that I got paid for. And I found it to be a blast.
Yeah.
I struggled with it for about a week, and then I crumpled the page up and threw it away. And 6 days later, I was done with my entire chapter. So I thought, wow, this actually works out for me. And then I sat down and tried to write the Great American Novel.
Yeah.
And that's never going to go anywhere.
Oh.
I have no gift for plot.
Oh.
Not my thing. And I genuinely didn't enjoy it. So I thought, okay, that was weird. And then I got the chance to write Podcasting for Dummies, and I loved every second of it. So I've realized I'm a nonfiction author. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Okay.
So now I'll do some more with that. What? I don't know. I got a couple of things in the works. You know, I've got some feelers out there that I've been talking to some people about. So we'll see, because I enjoy that.
Very cool. I loved the bio for you in Podcasting for Dummies. Let's see if I can get this right. Evo is the poster child for type A personalities the world over. Washed-up musician, tree-hugging herbalist, heretical but ordained minister, talk radio personality, advertising executive, and technology innovator, all wrapped up in one single-serving package. I want to talk about each of these really quick. Washed-up musician. Tell us about when you started playing guitar and bass,
sure.
What happened with that?
Well, it's a funny story how I got to playing. I was working in California with a bunch of guys in a large company, and the vice president of the area I worked for had come to me and said, you used to play music when you were in high school, didn't you? I was 25 or so. I said, sure I did. He said, all right, well, I think I'm going to get together a band. Are you interested? I said, I'd love to. So 3 months later, he contacts me again and says, all right. And he rattled off the people that were going to play, and he said, and I got this guy named Ron who's going to play the drums. And I said, wait a minute, I play drums. And he said, I thought you played bass guitar. My response was, I guess I do now. So I went out and bought a bass guitar. And I used to play six-string guitar when I was much younger and grew bored and frustrated with trying to place four fingers at a time. And I could play single notes really well. But, you know, chords were beyond me.
Yeah.
And bass guitar, ooh, one-finger chords, I'm in. So so I picked it up, and for like 3 years we were together doing cover of tunes and whatever. And I got to Phoenix, and I met a really talented guy named Don Cross, who is just a musician. It doesn't really matter what it is. Don plays and wants to do something with it, whether it's guitar, whether it's drums, whether it's the trumpet, whatever. Don's always had something going. He and I hooked up through some weird connections. And we just synced up together really well. And we formed a band called Serpent of Eve, along with another guy named Dave Gonzalez. And we were just strictly a studio band at the time. We did two or three different albums of all of our original music. And that was a lot of fun. But then we kind of lost Dave. He had to pursue a career of driving a beer truck.
Oh, poor guy.
So, yeah. So we lost him, and I teamed up with and Don as well with these really cool, interesting, innovative people that were forming a band called Spaz Kitty, and it was a ska punk band.
Uh-huh.
And I loved the music, although I had never played ska before. So again, I took home tons of CDs and had to learn how to play that funky rhythm. But being a drummer and a bass player, you know, rhythm's not really a problem for me. we were together for about a year and a half. We did a lot of gigs here in around the Phoenix Valley. In fact, the band's still together. Don and I both left the band for a variety of reasons. One of the fact that I was moving 100 miles away,
right.
And really wanted to focus in more on the radio stuff that I was doing. So they're still playing, but that was a lot of fun. My favorite memories of the band is we did a cover song, and I really don't like playing cover tunes, and I told the band that, so they wanted to do a cover of Sedated, and so I agreed to it, but only if we did it country style.
I would love to hear that.
Favorite song. You know what? Brian Ibbett from Coverville has a copy of it, so email him and tell him you want him to play that song on there. So.
All right.
Sedated by Spaz Kitty.
Cool. Okay, so, and you're also an herbalist. Now, are you still practicing up in Cottonwood, or?
Yes, I do. I have a handful of clients, not many. You know, I graduated from the Southwest Institute of Healing Arts, their herbal program in, I believe it was 2000. I'd been studying since 97, kind of on my own, reached a point to where I was as far as I could get. I needed somebody with more knowledge than me to take it further, so I met a really cool lady who'd been a practicing herbalist for 30-some-odd years that was teaching an advanced course in herbalism. So studied under her. Her name was Joanne Sanchez, really talented, wonderful lady, taught me amazing things. And after that, I moved to Cottonwood and grabbed a handful of clients. My specialty is the natural healing plants of this area. Mm-hmm. I like to use things that are local to where somebody happens to be. That's one of my specials. And the other one is dealing with people like me, type A personalities that have way too much going on in their lives that really don't want to change and live the monastic lifestyle, but need some things to help calm them down. So I do a mixture of herbs and then also just some stress reduction techniques to kind of help people like me deal with the world.
Cool. Okay. Next one. Ordained minister.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm an ordained minister. I have actually performed 1, 2, 3 weddings, and I have another one scheduled, I believe, for March.
Cool.
Kind of a funny story. Some very close friends of my wife and I got married over 2000, and they invited us to fly out to California to be with them in their wedding, and their wedding was in some guy's house, and it was just them and this guy. And I said, this is kind of cool. What's this all about? So I talked with him, and he became an ordained minister because he had some friends that wanted to get married and didn't really want to have all of the church stuff thrown on top of them. And in most states, all you need to do is be recognized by an organized religion. So there's a group out there called the Universal Life Church. Mm-hmm. And if you'd like to be an ordained minister, you go to universallife.org, you fill out a web form, and they send you a piece of paper in the mail that says you are now an ordained minister.
Yep.
So while I wouldn't ever presume to stand up and, you know, preach a sermon or, you know, give someone the last rites, because I'm not that kind of ordained minister, I definitely am able to perform ceremonies such as marriages within the letter of the law, at least in Arizona and many other states.
Right. I was just going to ask you, because I, too, am an ordained minister through the ULC. And I performed one ceremony, and that was here in Maricopa County. That was in Glendale. But I wanted to know if it was different in, is it Yavapai County up there?
All of mine have been done also in Maricopa.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't done the Yavapai yet, but I assume it's the same.
Don't assume, but I bet it is.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the great thing about it. As the minister of the ceremony, I make it all up to them. Go get your paperwork, give it to me, I'll sign it, you mail it back in. You're more responsible than I am at this point.
Well, a friend of mine just performed one in Colorado, and apparently in Colorado, it's extremely simple. You don't even need an ordained minister. One person says, do you? The other person says, yes. They say, do you? The other person says, yes. You're married. It's that simple.
That's awesome.
You have to have a license, but
sure. You
don't need a minister. It's as simple as anybody can perform the ceremony. That is, I wish it was everywhere, but for those places where it isn't quite like that, the ULC makes it easier.
They make people like you and I who really get a kick out of doing it, you know, is the whole reason that we do that.
Yes.
You know, when my wife and I got married, we got married at 20 years old. We lived in Oklahoma at the time. Not because she was pregnant. My son was born when I was 23. Do your math. but in the state of Oklahoma, in order for a woman can get married in the state of Oklahoma if she is 18 or older.
Mm-hmm.
A male in Oklahoma has to be 21 or older unless he gets his parents' permission. That just struck me as the most bizarre thing on the planet. I need my mommy's permission to get married, and I'm 20 years old. I'm living on my own. We've been living with this woman. No. Not that my mother wouldn't have given us permission, but we didn't want to go that route. So we drove to Texas and got married. And our plan was to go to a justice of the peace to perform the ceremony, but my wife kind of got all sentimental there towards the end and said she'd really like to have it a minister do. Mm-hmm. So we found a really nice guy down on South Padre Island, Texas, a little place called Chapel by the Sea. And it really was. He had sliding windows that he opened up, and there was the ocean in front of there. And it was my wife and I and the minister, and we got married. And he talked to us for like 20 minutes beforehand and said, okay, come on, let's do this thing. And it was beautiful. It was a great ceremony. I said, you know, that's the kind of minister that I'd like to be and help these people do that. So when my friends got married years ago or years later, I said, you know, this is something I've got to help people do this so that there's release the stress. Because getting married is stressful, especially, yes, from what I understand, for women. I didn't really feel that much stress, but women folk tend to feel a little more. So I hope to relieve some of that.
There you go. Awesome. So, let's see. We already know about the talk radio personality.
Oh, yeah.
Advertising executive and technology innovator. Well, technology innovator, we know about podiobooks.com. So
right. Well, and my prior life before that, you know, I worked inside of e-business. You know, I led multi-million dollar revenue generating products for years before I decided to get out of that and go into consulting. And so in consulting, I'm now doing online advertising. So I work with a firm out of New York City and place, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 million worth of ads on behalf of our clients every year.
Wow.
It's a job.
It's, you know, a job.
It pays the bills. There are definitely some challenges and some things that are quite interesting. But when it all boils down to it, I'd rather just be podcasting all day long.
Yeah. So I guess that really brings me back to one last thing, and that is, how many people do you think are really making money out of podcasting? And is that something that you think is going to change in the future? Or do you think, hey, we should just do this to do what we love, and if we make a buck or two, that's cool?
Well, you know, I'd love to have the Dave Schlesher attitude about it, which is the latter one. You know, do what you love, and if you can make a buck or two, that is cool. And in fact, that's the approach I still take every single day. But I do see some opportunities coming for people to be able to afford to podcast full time. You know, I would have said quit your day job, but that's been patented now. Or trademarked. I don't think I can say that without giving Adam and Ron some money. So it is possible, but where I think you're going to find the biggest thing happening is not necessarily with people who just want to sit in front of a microphone and talk all day long. You know, we have a medium for that. It's called radio. Podcasting needs to be something different.
Right.
So your message has to be different, but you also have to think about what is revenue-generating opportunities that takes podcasting. There are a lot of folks, I think, that will happen in 2006 that will find significant sums of income from production work, from actually helping other people make podcasts, helping organizations and companies get into podcasting. There's a huge opportunity for that. I think there's a great chance also for people to get involved in the educational system. That is the great untapped market.
Absolutely. I would love to see, and I think I'd heard either you talking about it or maybe you'd written about it, about seeing Podio books become something that you could see textbooks making its way to.
No doubt. Any sort of information that is sequential in nature and needs to be started from one and unique to that particular person needs to be put out in podcast form, probably the way we're doing with Podio books with our little Each-Caster feed that goes out for you. But those are the true opportunities. You know, can you make money by sitting together, you and your spouse, in a farmhouse in Wisconsin podcasting? Yeah, you can. How many people can do that becomes the big question. Those people that will find a way to derive real income from podcasting will make sure that it's in the spirit of podcasting, which is the first thing you said, or do what you love.
Right.
So that's got to be a big part of it. But do something innovative. Find a new direction for this. You know, as we said before, nothing new inside of podcasting, but we can take this avenue of distributed audio and video content, I even call video podcasts just podcasts, mm-hmm, a new direction. That's where the money's going to come. So one show a week where you sit down for 30 minutes and do it, of course you're not going to make any money off of that. I mean, that's ludicrous to think that's going to happen to anybody. But maybe you help 15 different podcasters produce some stuff.
Right.
Maybe you work with an organization to help them figure out this new distribution method. There will be opportunities that will present themselves. I guarantee it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sitting with me and making the time to chat.
Well, you're welcome.
And I'm looking forward to listening to more of the Dragon Page and Slice of Sci-Fi. Say hi to everybody over there at the Dragon Vista Studios.
And, I will definitely do that, Dan. And we look forward to seeing your book on patiobooks.com before too long.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much. Take care.
You're very welcome.
Hello, this is the roving reporter for Michael Enable's Dragon Page. I'm here in front of Starbucks, seeing who listens. There's a nice young lady here. Let me ask her. Excuse me, miss. Do you listen to Michael Enable's Dragon Page?
Get away from me, you freak!
Ah! Hot coffee! Hot coffee! Okay. She obviously doesn't listen. Okay. Ooh, I see a girl over there. I can see her thong just poking above her pants. Hold on, let me go ask her. Excuse me, miss. Miss, yes. I see you're wearing a thong. Does that thong say, Evo is my Yoda?
Hey!
Ooh, I take that as a no. Okay. Ooh, let me go ask this gentleman over here. He's got an iPod. Excuse me, sir. Do you listen to Michael and Evo's Dragon Page?
Do I look like some kind of f***ing geek? Yo, boys, load him up in the car.
All right, boss, we got him.
Well, at least they left me with my iPod. Yeah, I can listen to Michael Enable's Dragon Page myself now. Michael Enable's Dragon Page. Something good to listen to while you're just riding around.
And that wraps up this week's interview and podcast. I'd like to thank Evo Terra again for joining me. And I'm going to wrap up this show with another song from his band Serpent of Eve. It's called Astray. Take care, everybody. I'll talk to you later.
Let me
That wraps up another episode of Is This Thing On? If you'd like to join us on the podcast, Skype me at Is This Thing On Podcast. If you have any comments about this podcast, feel free to drop me a note at shret.net/podmail. Thanks for listening. This blog and podcast are copyright 2006 by Dan Charette, under the Creative Commons Attribution with No Derivatives License, some rights reserved. Music for this podcast was provided by GarageBand.com and from the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network.